Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York lawmakers have started passing parts of the state budget more than 2 weeks after it was due. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, Thursday's votes centered on cracking down on hate crimes, retail theft, and illegal cannabis shops.
Governor Kathy Hochul highlighted steps taken in the budget to reduce retail theft. They include increasing penalties for assaulting a retail worker and closing loopholes in current laws to make it easier to arrest and convict people for the online sale of stolen goods. Hochul says store owners will no longer have to fend off on their own brash and organized criminal networks.
No one wants to walk into a store to find items locked up behind glass windows or worse. See one of these sprees firsthand. No one wants to see the shops in their neighborhood boarded up because business owners simply say, I can't do this anymore. It's just not working. It's not worth it. Because that threatens the very vitality of these communities, which I will stop at nothing to protect.
The spending plan also creates new powers for local law enforcement to shutter the thousands of illegal marijuana shops now operating in the state. Police will be able to immediately padlock a shop found to be in violation of the state's cannabis laws. Until now, they had to wait until the case wound its way through the courts. The black market outlets have sprung up in recent years as New York legalized the use of adult recreational cannabis, but has been very slow to grant licenses to legitimate retailers. Assemblywoman Pat Fahey, who represents Albany, says the botched rollout of the legal cannabis program has led to the proliferation of the illegal shops.
It's really been a flagrant disregard for the law and hurting those who are legitimately trying to put their life savings in and enter this business in a legitimate way. So very pleased to see that.
The budget also includes stiffer penalties for hate crimes. Assemblywoman Grace Lee, a Democrat from Lower Manhattan and an original sponsor of the provision, praised the move.
We are updating New York's outdated hate crime statute to respond to the severe rise in hate against minority communities, including the Asian, Jewish, Muslim, Black, and LGBTQ+ New Yorkers. There's a long-term corrosive effect when we fail to address hate in our communities.
The budget bill also authorizes the state to close up to 5 state prisons in the next 90 days. Those with prisons in their districts or nearby say the job losses will have a negative economic impact in those communities. Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh is a Republican from Saratoga County.
These prisons are sometimes the only thing in the local economy that's there. The biggest employer for an area. So this is going to be a bitter pill, really, to have up to 5 more closures in on such short notice.
Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, a Democrat from the Buffalo area, says while she thinks the 90-day notice is too short, she says communities need to look to other means of creating jobs.
Prisons are not supposed to be a job opportunity for people. It's supposed to be a way to reform people who have been convicted of a crime. If you haven't been convicted and you're not in jail, there's no reason to keep them open.
As of late Thursday, a number of key budget bills were not yet completed, including an education spending bill that distributes school aid and the state's financial plan, as well as an affordable housing program. A tentative agreement between Hochul and legislative leaders would include a tax break for real estate developers who build affordable housing, as well as strengthening tenants' rights. The Senate and Assembly plan to remain at the Capitol until Saturday, at least, in order to complete the bills and finish getting a budget in place. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Andrew Rhein. He's the president of the Citizens Budget Commission. It's a nonprofit that looks at the finances of New York State and offers their critique and review. And I began by asking Andrew about the organization's statement on the current budget, which said financially it's headed in the wrong direction. I asked him why.
What we see from all the information provided is revenues are strong in New York. The economy has been doing well, but instead of using those strong receipts to stabilize New York's fiscal foundation, the budget adds more and more spending, which is unaffordable in the long run. When you looked at what the governor had originally proposed, there was not only a $10 billion future budget gap, but structurally, meaning once you got rid of the kind of budget helpers on one time and temporary tax increases go away, the state has a structural budget gap of $16 billion. What we're seeing from the preliminary information coming out is that structural budget gap is not lower and may well be higher, but it's at least $16 billion. What that means, that's just not budget wonky stuff. That means that at some point in time, we hit a wall. And if we don't manage that better than we seem to be doing right now, that wall hurts people.
Well, so what's the fix? What would you recommend?
So it's interesting. You know, New York State, if you were to helicopter in from outer space and you were to listen to the debate, you would think, oh, my gosh, we don't do anything for anybody. There are so many needs. We must be the lowest spending state, and we must be cutting. So the first thing to do is think about the context. You know, it's interesting. New York State and localities, and that's the best data we have to compare around the country, We spend, and the state is the majority of this, we spend the second highest amount per capita in the country. And yes, the country is a diverse place, but we spend more than California, more than Connecticut, more than New Jersey, more than Massachusetts, and certainly more than some competitors of ours in Florida and Texas. So we spend a lot. And then you look at what New York State has been doing in recent years. We came through a pandemic and a recession, which one would normally think would be a contracting budgetary time. But when you look at state operating funds, which obviously, as you said, this whole state budget, including federal money, is $237 billion, but the kind of guts that we take out of the state economy to run the operations, not capital investment, run the operations, that's around $130 billion. When you look at what has happened in New York State between fiscal 21, that's like slightly into the recession, to what the governor's proposed, we've increased state operating funds $32.5 billion, mostly around 8% a year. And the governor proposed, and this is at the tail of this, the governor already proposed to increase spending $4.8 billion. That's over 4%. And now inflation has reduced a little bit. So we are a high spending state that is increasingly spending more and more each year. And we should be able to provide the services New Yorkers need within that level. So what we recommend is, as I mentioned, we have this $16 billion structural budget gap. If we could restrain spending, maybe 2% a year, maybe around inflation, we could actually reduce that over time. That would stabilize us and help the state be able to protect New Yorkers in the future.
That's Andrew Rhein, president of the Citizens Budget Commission. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. As the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency prepares to release its third five-year review of the Hudson River PCB cleanup by General Electric, two Hudson Valley congressmen are seeking additional remediation. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
The EPA is preparing to release the third five-year review of the Hudson River Superfund cleanup. GE completed its dredging of contaminated sediment from the river in a 40-mile section from Fort Edward to Troy in 2015. But as the report nears, Hudson Valley Congressman Pat Ryan and Mark Molinaro say the EPA should require GE to perform additional remediation. Ryan, a Democrat who previously served as Ulster County Executive, spoke on WAMC's Congressional Corner program last week.
Once again, GE is trying to leave, in my view, the cleanup unfinished and get off the hook. So one of the big takeaways is, unfortunately, we just can't trust these companies to have the interest of the people at heart. They are focused on primarily profit as their number one motivator.
Ryan and Molinaro released a joint statement on Tuesday. Molinaro, a Republican from the neighboring 19th District and former Dutchess County executive, said the EPA should, quote, take all action necessary to protect drinking water, our environment, and ecosystems, end quote. Molinaro and Ryan also led a letter to EPA Administrator Michael Regan that was signed by more than a dozen other members of Congress. One year ago, Molinaro and Ryan authored an op-ed in The Hill calling for additional PCB cleanup. It reads in part, quote, as members of different political parties, we continue our tradition of working together in the best interests of the communities we serve. Irrespective of the partisan differences dividing the nation, we have purposefully rededicated ourselves to the full removal of PCBs from the Hudson, end quote. The bipartisan push is noteworthy for Jeremy Cherson, senior manager of government affairs for Riverkeeper.
You know, I just want to take a step back and recognize how extraordinary it is that 20 members of Congress from both parties, from both states on either side of the Hudson, who can't agree on anything, agree on this.
As part of its process, EPA says it is reviewing fish, water, and sediment data. 5 years ago, the agency issued a certificate of completion of the remedial action for the cleanup. The issuance included language that could compel GE to pursue additional cleanup if the remedy is determined to have been ineffective. The Friends of Clean Hudson Coalition, a group of advocates that includes Riverkeeper, released its own review of publicly available cleanup data in November. The report found that PCB levels in fish, while decreasing minimally, are not meeting targets. Again, Cherson.
We're calling for EPA to take it as a badge of honor that the five-year review process is working, that they will recognize what the data says and reopen our options to look at additional steps we can take to lower PCB levels.
EPA says it is also incorporating feedback from agency technical experts, state and federal support agencies, and members of the site's community advisory group as part of its review process. The five-year review will be made available for public comment upon release. GE issued a statement in March after a coalition of state lawmakers and advocates also called for additional cleanup. It reads, quote, hailed as a historic achievement by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, GE's Hudson River dredging project removed the vast majorities of PCBs in the upper river and led to broad declines in PCB levels. Data collected by New York State following the completion of dredging showed that more than 99% of sediment samples in the upper Hudson were below EPA's dredging criteria, end quote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The city of Albany is one of 24 cities selected to participate in the city's Forward program. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
Cities Forward is a collaboration between the State Department and the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, known as ICLE, a global network of more than 2,500 local and regional governments in 125 countries committed to sustainable urban development. Angie Fife is the executive director for ICLE Local Governments for Sustainability USA.
All three ICLE offices are involved, as well as a couple of partners, Resilient Cities Catalyst out of New York and the Institute for the Americas based in San Diego. And what we have the pleasure of doing is working with 12 Latin American and Caribbean cities who are partnered with 12 U.S. cities, in some cases a county government. And we're really excited to have Albany partnering up with Manaus, Brazil.
Manaus officials say they are looking to reduce and eventually eliminate plastics pollution in the Mindu River. Manaus is the Amazon's largest city, home to more than 2 million people. Fife says they're impressed with Albany, where state government was able to ban single-use plastic bags in retail stores. She adds both cities are very committed to climate justice and addressing inequalities.
They will be understanding how financing is put together for these are typically large infrastructure projects, water infrastructure, housing, parks, etc. So they'll get to learn more about the best practices around financing in different contexts. They will also be exposed to subject matter experts, universities. Some will be U.S. universities. Others will be universities and subject matter experts in the Latin American and Caribbean context. We will be putting together a specific cooperation charter between Manaus and Albany. So they will collectively come together and decide on the types of things that they would like to work on jointly in terms of learning and growth. And because they're both river cities, Albany and Manaus have significant economic drivers in their community around rivers.
Democratic Mayor Kathy Sheehan says the partnership between Albany and Manaus, set to run through 2025, will be mutually beneficial.
We will be working with them on understanding what their sustainability issues are and how they're addressing them and vice versa. And we're just thrilled. We're only one of 12 cities in the United States selected for this program. And, you know, other cities include places like Dallas and Philadelphia, much bigger than the city of Albany. And I think it's a testament to how seriously we have taken sustainability. We've invested funding in it. We've invested people in it. And now we are going to be able to learn from a city in South America and be able to bring those teachings back here and hopefully accelerate the work that we're doing on sustainability.
Sheehan says the association will also help Albany develop its climate action plan and commitment to become carbon neutral by 2050.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York State Board of Elections has determined that only one Democrat is qualified to run in this year's race for the 21st Congressional District seat. Cannabis tax attorney Paula Collins is the only Democrat who filed the required petitions to be placed on the ballot. She will challenge incumbent Elise Stefanik, a top House Republican in the general election. Collins has a law office in Manhattan and is renting an apartment in Canton, a village in northern New York. Speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley, the candidate explained her ties to the 21st District.
I am a cannabis tax attorney, and that requires that I travel around the state. In fact, that was sort of how I began to learn more about the people and the issues that are in New York 21. It's also how I came to think, gee, I'd really like to buy some land and to start to settle in New York 21. Interestingly enough, the property I have entered into a purchase agreement on is in Rensselaer County, which you may know has now been drawn out of New York 21. But in the meantime, because that's just blank land and it's something that needs to be developed, which I will be doing in the upcoming months or years, I knew that I wanted a place to call home base as well as an office. And so it looked like Canton was a good place to do that because the distance that one has to travel if you're regularly moving about in New York 21, that distance, it's over 15,000 square miles. Canton is a great place. It's got a couple of universities and colleges there. Nice vibe to it. Couple of clients in the area. And so it made a whole lot of sense for me to be there.
Paula Collins, in past campaigns that have come up against Elise Stefanik, the Republican incumbent, she's been somewhat successful with this carpetbagging charges against her opponents. If there's even the slightest bit of history of somebody having not been in the district or leaving the district for a while, she will go after them. Do you feel you might be vulnerable to those sorts of challenges from your Republican opponent?
I would throw that carpetbagger term right back at her. She entered Congress really using her parents' summer camp address. In terms of being a carpetbagger, she has no basis on which to make that claim because she herself does not live in the district. Also, the law is on my side. Any registered Democrat in the state of New York can run in any congressional district. So as certainly as she hurls that term my way, I will hurl it right back because she has certainly had time and opportunity to locate her residence within the district, and she has obviously chosen not to.
What are some of your key issues?
Immigration is top of mind for those counties that are near the Canadian border. And what we recently saw was that we had a bipartisan bill in Congress that seemed to have every indication of getting the proper number of votes until the past president, Donald Trump, indicated to his followers, including Elise Stefanik, that it should be voted down. So I would like to see Congress come together and actually approve some type of lasting reform of immigration. The second issue as I travel around the district is broadband access. We have at our disposal the Rural Electrification Act, which was passed long ago in the 1930s, so in the early part of the last century. We could use portions of the Rural Electrification Act to pass a permanent funding and a permanent means of providing access throughout the district. I think all of us have had the experience of driving around in New York 21 and oops, there goes the cell phone service, or trying to log on and oops, there is no Wi-Fi anywhere within range. That impacts people's employment choices because people in New York 21 cannot reliably work from home like people in all other parts of the state and in much of the country can. And we did see that there is a need for educational services to be delivered at home as what happened during COVID or really during a regular Tuesday afternoon when kids need to sit down at the kitchen table and do homework. We also need to look at the vulnerabilities to our healthcare system if we don't have reliable internet.
Paula Collins, to get your message out about those key issues, you're going to need some money. How can you compete compared to Stefanik's fundraising?
I don't plan to. And I am actively fundraising, and I have a team actively engaged and working on that as we speak. But here's the thing. In March of 2024, the incumbent Democrat president, Joseph Biden, outraised the opponent, Donald Trump. Yet, despite that disparity in fundraising, they were still neck and neck in the polls. So I do not believe that we are running elections or that the voters are voting in the same way that is money driven. I believe that this is an election in which it's going to come down to who shows up on election day. The Republicans that I've spoken with are a little bit fatigued with the current status of the party. They're very concerned about our democracy. They're very concerned about having somebody who is multiply indicted and who is actively having to defend himself in court while still trying to entertain a return to the White House.
Paula, New York 21 historically has been a very Republican district. In the last, I believe it's like 150 years, we've only had one Democrat hold the seat. What makes you different from the other Democrats that have run and ended up losing?
You know, it's hard to call New York 21 a monolith. It's a vast, vast district. There are counties within New York 21 that voted twice for Barack Obama. So this idea that it is a solidly Republican district is actually new. And as I've indicated, I think there are Republicans and there are independents who are quite tired of what's going on. They're tired of the rhetoric. They're very, very concerned about this embrace of Putin or the embrace of fascism. And they're very, very concerned about things like January 6th or about Elise Stefanik's defense of the insurrectionists.
Paula, you mentioned Joe Biden earlier. Do you support his reelection bid?
I do support Joe Biden's reelection bid.
Democrat Paula Collins will also appear on the Working Families Party line in the 21st Congressional District race. A statement from Alex DeGrasse, senior advisor to Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, notes that the incumbent has, quote, demolished every general election Democrat opponent at the ballot box, unquote, noting strong support from across the district throughout her decade in office. The statement says Stefanik, quote, will crush this New York City far-left Democrat who has never even lived here, is newly registered to vote at a bed and breakfast, and even listed her New York City address on her petitions, if she even makes the ballot for a possible lack of petitions, unquote. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2416. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.